Okay, now we will call the meeting of the Los Osos Community Services District Board of Directors for Thursday, April 6, 2023 to order. Join me for the flag salute, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could we have a roll call, please?
Director Forcroy.
I'm here.
Director Gatchel.
Here.
Director Womack.
Present.
Vice President Ohulski.
Present.
President Pisania.
I am here. So thank you. We've got a full board tonight. With that, we'll go on to agenda item two, general action item, Station 15 building condition assessment final report.
Thank you. Yes, it's final draft.
Oh,
just to be clear. if there's
I thought it had plans and specifications ready to go.
It's pretty much there. Wow. I do want to introduce Tom Ray. He's from Omni Design, was the lead on the project. I felt that this was a very good, thorough report with a lot of great information. Basically, we'll step through kind of what the executive summary says, because there's so much data in here, and obviously answer questions. Not asking for any direct action tonight. It's more of to get the information, ask questions, maybe a general feel from the board, the direction we might want to take. I do want to take this to ESAC, and I'll get into the next steps towards the end of the point. I just wanted to frame that up for you. So basically, a little bit of background. Station 15 is an old building. It was built in phases in the 1960s and 70s. The first phase was on the right-hand side looking at it, where the admin offices are, and the bay where the trucks are. In the 70s, the living quarters were added. There was some renovation. I think Tom actually worked on some of the renovation that occurred in the past. Some of it was in the late 90s and the other in the early 2000s. But because of the overall age, we decided it was time to do an assessment. And that's kind of the genesis of what we're talking about tonight. The purpose of the assessment was, of course, to identify any major defects or deficiencies, provide options to modify, replace, expand, or relocate. When we started this, because of the age, we thought, well, maybe we would need a new facility. And then kind of look out what we could do with that building, if that's the direction we take to make it function for the next 10 or more years, add life to that building. And then provide a baseline for setting priorities for the maintenance, repairs, or replacements of the station. So the factors we considered were, of course, the physical and structural evaluation, looking at compliance with current building codes, any retrofits to maintain building safety and meeting current seismic codes. Then we were digging into the mechanical HVAC system evaluation, physical condition of those systems, and looked at the energy efficiency of equipment, et cetera. As we got into the electrical, we were looking at system assessment, compliance with current codes, as we were doing with everything. Looking at energy efficiency opportunities, any need of repairs. We were looking at the backup generation up there to make sure it was adequate for any kind of a power outage. And again, retrofit and maintain the building for safety for the occupants. And then we did go through the plumbing, which actually came out looking fairly well, better than most of the other systems, but it was evaluation and compliance with codes for today. So it was quite thorough. And this was the surprising thing that hit me when I read the initial draft report, that the building is in relatively good condition with no visible imminent threats. So with that, we did go in and identify deficiencies. And this is where we'll try to get into the details, and if you need questions answered, please do. And Tom will be available to help us out on anything coming up here. The current conditions could threaten the station's ability to remain operational during a catastrophe, mainly an earthquake. Could jeopardize fire personnel. There have been identified some areas that we'll talk about in a moment. Hinder accessibility. The station really isn't handicap accessible and has areas that are hard to maneuver within and could disrupt operations. There are also other, related deficiencies. And current conditions don't reflect the best practices. And this one's pretty important to me for reducing exposure to carcinogens and other harmful agents. And that's for our firefighters using the building. What we did then did a series of meetings with fire personnel up there and the consultant team and myself to look at, try to prioritize and based on the deficiencies, the primary ones being to provide options to modify, replace, expand, or relocate the station to remain operation during an earthquake or other disaster, operate sustainably with functional efficiency to try to make it more efficient to run the building, and make any life safety improvements. Again, that's very important. And then our secondary priorities were the long-term safety conditions, you know, that weren't like what we'd call, none of it's life-threatening, but some are more important than others. But to look at the overall, how could we remedy everything on the laundry list we created, create better accessibility, and then make it sustainable over the life cycle of the facility. So I wanted to point out, this one's probably hard to see. It is on page 8 of your report. This is kind of the existing layout. In the kind of the middle area to the right is the beige, I'll call it a beige, which is the apparatus bays and support areas. And as you can see, they kind of wrap into both sides of the building with the right side, the gray areas being the administration areas, but you got one, the training room that's over in the living area to the, on the left up there in the corner, and then the blue being the living and recreation areas in the facility. So as you can see, it's kind of organized in a way that isn't ideal, though it is functional. It is absolutely functional. And we'll come back to this as we move forward. I wanted to get into the cost breakdown. Three options were provided. If you want details, there's a great summary on page 20 of the report that goes into item by item that I thought was very helpful. You know, you could, and I'm using the executive summaries here. Option one is to make improvements to the existing fire station within its existing footprint and correct the higher priority deficiencies that were identified, you know, the short-term ones identified in the report. And we'll get to those here in just a moment. The other one is to remodel the existing facility to enhance, you know, its overall effectiveness and add some square footage to make it more flexible and operational, reconfigure the living space to better protect the firefighters from the carcinogens that we've identified in the other contamination, enlarge the administrative wing to make it more functional by moving the training office or training room over into the administrative offices side. And it's and then we would separate the administrative functions from the living areas. Because if you've ever been to a meeting up there at night, you're walking through the living area to get to the room, which firefighters are very tolerant of, but you could imagine it's disruptive. And it's important to remember this, this option could be phased in over multiple budget cycles if that's what we decide to do. And then this is what it would look like. As you can see, they're calling in this part, it's again, this was off page 19 of the report, if this is hard to see. The hot zone being the bay area where, you know, the trucks pull in and out, and that's where we get most of the contamination and carcinogen production. Over on the left, you would then have a better organized living area. On the right, you could see we'd enlarge the back part of the building to make that into the training room. That'd be adding square footage onto the back part. And then that yellow area, that current, a lot of the functions in that area are now out in the bay. And that's where like the equipment, the equipment that the firefighters use, where they keep their gear, which is now, it should be in a place that can be decontaminated and then remain decontaminated. But now where it's at, it actually could become contaminated again. And then what's not shown on here is that we would want to add in the back part of the building. Right now, there's a couple of C-trains and some other things that they've kind of makeshift workshop and other things that we would eliminate and actually build a structure back there to have that function. The other thing about that yellow area right now, that is actually where we keep the reserve fire truck. So again, it would, building that building in the back would add a place to have that, in storage. So, and then finally, option three would provides an estimation for what it would cost to relocate and build a new facility. So getting into the actual costs, this is in the report. I wanted to make sure people understood those first two numbers for architecture and improvements and accessibility are the first line in that architectural improvement below that $297,900. But as you can see, the option one, which would correct some of the higher priority items that we just talked about, would run about $811,000. And that would be within the footprint. And then there's definitely a tremendous amount of detail in the appendixes on what that work would entail. Option two is that longer term solution that would add square footage. As you can see, the big ticket items are the living quarter side and adding that new building where the engine shop and fire hoses would be and reserve gear would be stored. And so that comes with a price tag of about $3.2 million. A lot of money, but still, if we're looking at a long-term solution, I wasn't too shocked by that. Then finally, a brand new fire station to acquire or find a building site and then acquire it would be about $2 million. And then the actual building is about $13.2 million for grand total of about $15.2 million. Again, quite a large sum of money. So looking at next steps, like I said, I'm just kind of looking at the general feel of the board on the numbers, on what we're the report's proposing that we do. I want to emphasize that I will be bringing forward shortly a study. It's called a standard of cover study, which will analyze our services both currently and for the future. My hope was to have already had that to the board and underway, but events of the beginning of this year kind of slowed things down. But we will pick that back up. But all this is going to feed into hopefully what we'll call emergency services strategic plan. So we got some time here. I'm not saying we have to make a decision and start moving forward with anything on the station until maybe we see the standard of cover and make sure what we're doing with the station coincides or it jives with that, what the results of that. So with that, I'll take any questions.
I have a couple of questions. In the priorities page, could you run back to that one if it's not that much of a problem?
Nope, not a problem at all.
So you said you, are these priorities that you said you talked to staff about this? Are these priorities in order now or
no,
is this just?
They are, these are not in priority of number. Basically we just grouped everything we discussed into two groups, primary and secondaries, but we didn't rank them.
No. Okay, that's what I was asking. Right. These are just the three that you grouped together for the primary. Okay. And then the second item I have for the cost breakdown in section five, mm-hmm. It seems to me that there would be a significant cost for architectural and engineering services, and those are not included here.
Tom, is that okay?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If you want to come up, so just so everyone can hear, sorry.
Because I'm looking at it and there's nothing in here for that.
I think when he was doing the Michael Brennan did the cost analysis, and I think he just incorporated that in as an overall, kind of broke it down in each one of those trades for that work.
So it is included, but it's not broken out by a line item.
So if we take, I'm just saying something.
Like the 297, probably I would say 35.
So if we take the apparatus bay, for example, then that includes the architectural and engineering services for that item.
Right.
So that's included at each sub item. Okay. Yes. That was my question.
And there was one on, we discussed this too. You know, all these are such, this is today, this moment.
Prices. Oh, yeah. We understand that.
Yeah. That's where it kind of.
We all know that one. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That's all I had, Chuck.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Just a question on, if we started on option one high priorities pieces in parallel, looking at some long-term, would this be like sunk costs if we did option one versus doing some stuff and then starting to retrofit from two?
Well, all of the option one projects are embedded in option two.
Okay.
When we looked at option two, we thought it would be best, and it was counterintuitive to me, but it made sense when we started talking about it, that we, because of the cost of the new building at $600,000, I thought, oh, we could wait on that. But realistically, if you're going to start moving down the road of option two, you need that first.
Yeah.
So they have a place to put things,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so it's really, I guess, and Tom, you might want to weigh in here again. If you wanted to start doing things in option one, which would be in option two, we'd have to figure out how to phase it so it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I just didn't want to know if, like, we start doing option one, then convert it over to option two. Like, is that all that wasted money?
So no. And that was a question I had up front when I said, well, or is option one in option two? And that the answer is yes.
Okay.
If, say, for some crazy reason, option three turns out to be our long-term plan, is option one something we should undertake anyway? Because that's years away, option three.
More than likely, yes. More than likely. Okay. That would be a yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think a lot of this depends on the standard to cover, what comes back. That's going to talk about where the most efficient place in town locations are to have a fire station based on call volumes
right
now and projected call volumes into the future. I mean, it could potentially tell us that in 5 years time we need two stations.
Correct.
And so I really think we're going to need to take a peek at that. For me, if we need to keep this station a station, I think we need to go through the whole thing and bring it completely up, so when we do have a disaster, our fire station's intact and the firefighters are able to go do their jobs. I kind of see option one is not necessarily a band-aid, but it's kind of just patching it up, whereas option two is making it completely usable, that location.
And it would definitely add 10 plus years to life.
Right. So I see, that's kind of how I'm thinking about those. But again, I think it depends on what we see come out of that study that's going to take into consideration the future call volumes and the future level of service that we're going to need to provide. So I kind of want to see what that says first.
The ESAC has in the past done an analysis of the location, et cetera, and the call volume, et cetera. And it was determined that the current location is the prime location.
Sure.
Unless this town grows in some direction that's unanticipated. Unknown, yeah.
Right. But as with the current level and the current configuration of the community, that location is the best, is what the fire department thought.
Chief Province agrees at this point in time as well.
So did you say option two just gives us 10 years of life?
I'm not sure of the exact, it'd be more than 10 years of life, but.
Because I guess I need to know what the years of life we're getting for the 3 million versus yes. If we did the new one, do we get 30, 40 years? I mean, that might, that's kind of relevant.
With even increased functioning, maybe, you know, up to, I mean, option two, does that bring us up to the same standards functionality as option three, a brand new station?
Tom, can you speak to that?
Yeah.
Tom has worked on many fire stations.
So that, and actually I'm speaking actually too as a community member. I live right down the street from it. Designed some people's houses in this room. No, but I was looking at, I think that you would probably have 40 years more life out of it since the last time, I mean, it was okay. Construction was probably 1970. So, you know, that's 50 years ago. And it's you know, the location is from what I heard from the chief and everything else, it's just so ideal because they can pull right out onto the street and not have cross traffic going there or anything. If you had a new station, it'd be nice because you could probably have maybe like with our remodel, you actually just have two bays, you know, where the engines will be rolling out of. If you could have more bays, three bays or something like that, that would be more advantageous, but it just didn't seem like it was that necessary for that. I mean, they were very happy with that resolution. It's really more, I mean, I can say what we were really looking at. I mean, they have their personal training area is in the app bay. That's gotta be one of the worst things I've seen. I mean, you just don't do that. And then, just the changes over from 1975, I'd say, till now of how we decontaminate the firemen when they're coming back from fire, so they're not carrying cancer into their rooms with them, or carcinogens into their rooms, is just so important. And that's something we could just do it within that footprint, well, within that building with a few changes to the footprint. So it's a fortunate, like we were saying, the buildings, as far as the seismic and everything, it's low, it's not real heavy. To make it meet today's essential facilities requirements isn't extremely difficult. It's not, you know, there's just a few things to do. It wasn't like the whole building had to be totally redone for earthquake requirements. So it's there. It's in a good location. It's probably, like I say, maybe one of the best locations around because it's so close to everything, and it's close to CAL FIRE responding to Montanadero as well. So it seems like a good thing. Another thing that we talked about is this is all modeled on CAL FIRE continuing to contract right as well. So
good assumption.
Yeah. Right. It does take into account of future changes in the way we staff that it could still handle staffing changes, you know, more
people. So is there a reason why we couldn't use the current land and save ourselves $2 million?
And tear the one down and start over?
So. Yeah. I mean, I actually prefer the second option. I just want to understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like the years of usable life is relevant to our decision.
We would just have to figure out how to operate without a station, which I think could be done just with the Sunnyside School facility. You know, we actually talked about that. You know, it wouldn't be ideal and hopefully it wouldn't take long, but I think we could figure that out.
Okay, just save $2 million. And if that the current location is good.
Great. But I do agree with Matthew that we should probably, that's why I wanted to make sure you understood there's more to this puzzle we're trying to do. So as there's no rush to get right. Make a decision, but I wanted to plant the seed, good questions. We should be thinking about this. We'll try to get that standard to cover study done as fast as possible and then bring all this back, because then we'll have to find funding sources, of course.
Yeah, but what Chris is saying makes sense to me. I mean, if option two brings it, essentially gives us a brand new station versus option three, and they're basically going to have the same lifespan before we need to consider replacement, then I mean, those economic decisions are pretty simple at that point.
Yeah.
And then I guess, I can't remember if it was Troy or Marshall brought it up, but I would be curious in the future to see the priorities. I mean, it does make sense to me actually to build the building, the new building for the engines. That I was kind of thinking that, even though it's not in the list of the first priorities. But right. I mean, that would be curious, like then we could kind of figure out the cash flow of funding, right, or have an idea.
Because back in here, we have all the priorities are embedded in the appendix.
Okay.
Appendices.
In order?
Not in order, because they're grouped by function, like electrical, mechanical. And we must have had them pulled out for staff discussion.
Yeah, there are like a couple of items that are pretty large. Is the app bay doors?
Yeah,
don't always function.
We have a new fire engine. We don't want it to get banged up by a door.
I know. So there's that, and then the plumble vent sounds like it needs to be replace and updated with a magnetic one instead, because the compressor keeps them up at night, and it just it's old and needs to be improved. And that's like step one towards that carcinogenic removal. So,
and then is the power line out in front, like towards the top of that list?
I know, that's a tough one.
I don't remember exactly where that fell. I don't, because that's, excuse me, you know, that would be a factor during either a storm or a disaster if the pole came down, you know. It must have been in the, you know, disaster ranking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The ability to respond.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just had one more question. I'm sure you guys discussed it. I think in ESAC we were talking about the new engine was barely big enough to fit in the current bay, and there's option two, like making sure we have the bays are going to be expanded for newer engines and stuff.
What we're gonna start with is going with, instead of a roll up door, they're like a bifold doors is what they use now. Mm-hmm. So if you know, you can afford them, but that's what they use, so you don't have, gives you much more clearance.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, if there are no other board questions or comments, we'll go to public comment for agenda item two.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium.
Richard Margetson, I like getting the idea of getting started on some of the priority two. But Ron touched on it, funding sources. Have any idea of where? I know we may be getting some money back. Is that going to be earmarked towards this? The contingency reserves, capital reserves. We know we got a ton in vehicle replacement. I just wondered if that's been part of the analysis.
There's no other. Okay, no other public comment here in the room. No online. Then
let me. Really hasn't been any funding analysis yet. Of course, I'm definitely eyeballing, you know, the money we received, refund we received from Cal Fire from last year. I have a meeting with Chief Owens after I get back, April 26th, to talk about the audit. But as soon as I understand exactly the cash flow, we definitely are healthy in Fund 301. So the $800,000 doesn't seem to be a problem at all. But again, I think what we need to do is be strategic in how we spend money on the phasing, like we talked about. But, you know, going back to Tom's comment, you know, there are probably things we could get started on.
Especially if they relate to health and safety.
Yeah.
Okay, with that, and thank you for being here and explaining all that.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
We'll go on to
agenda. Yeah, thank you, Tom. I have to say this because you brought this up. I didn't. My house was the first house Tom ever designed. And Tom will admit that.
Okay, agenda item 3, public comment for items not on the agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. No public comment online.
Okay, and there's none here in the boardroom either. So we'll go on to agenda item 4, administrative and committee reports, a fire department report. Online.
No, Chief Province couldn't be here tonight. He thought Chief Jenkins was going to be, but we did receive the report.
Yes, we
did. And I did want to point out a couple of things. I said I'd look at it for or state a few of the things. You know, there's the general activity, which I don't think we need to go into too much detail on. But down in special programs, of course, met with the consultant that helped us with building assessment. The fire drills, they've been working hard on training, which I think is great. And working with the city of Morro Bay, which is, I think, very fantastic too. Something I'll touch on in my general manager report is working with County Emergency Medical Services and San Luis Ambulance on response times. I'll elaborate a little bit more on that. One of the big things is weed abatement will commence. The inspections will commence in May. So people have a month now to start abating their weeds before the fire department is out there doing their inspections and then issuing abatement letters. Another one Chief Province was talking about, they used to test their own fire hoses, and it was kind of a time intensive and just a cumbersome activity. They've entered into a service agreement, which is what most stations do now, to do the testing for them. So it's an added expense, but I think he thinks it'll provide a better service and provide better accuracy on the testing. And then the 42-91 defensible space inspections, I forget what the numbers stand for, but that is something that came into state law about maintaining defensible space around your house. And I think that is mostly in our neighborhoods that are the SLA, state, L area. Anyway, it's the areas that the state are responsible for, like up in Bayview Heights, probably east side of town. So people out in those areas will have those inspections. In town, it's more of the weed abatement for our local area. And with that, I don't know if I can answer any questions, but I did want to review that with
you. Thank you. Let's see, after that, we have the sheriff's report.
Hey, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we can, thank you.
All right, good evening, everyone. Elliot Coy, Sergeant with Sheriff's Coast Station. And I'll get going with the report here. So for last month in March, it looks like we had 65 calls for service in Los Osos, up a little bit from 59 the year prior, not up too much. 4 of those calls were assault or battery calls. We had 41 disturbance calls, 4 burglary reports, 11 thefts, 6 vandalisms, 3 mail thefts, 0 phone scams, 25 suspicious circumstances calls, 80 enforcement stops, and 36 preventative patrol activities, which could be foot patrol, just extra patrols, things of that nature. And that's all I've got from that. Does anybody have any questions?
Questions from the board? No, I have none tonight. Thank you.
All right, take care, everyone. Thank you.
You do the same. The Highway Patrol Department report.
Good evening, I'm here, and I'll ask the same question. Hope you can hear me okay.
Yes, thank you.
Very good. All right, for the month of March in Los Osos, we had a total of 5 collisions and 1 DUI arrest. Unrelated to the collisions, we did make 1 DUI arrest out of the collision, out of the collisions, and then we made 1 hit and run arrest as well. The 3 collisions that did not involve an arrest were all non-injury collisions. It's a little bit clunky. I have them, have the locations on my phone. I just have to navigate here a little bit. One of the non-injury collisions was at Los Olivos and Mountain View, 2 vehicle collision. Both of those vehicles sustained minor damage in that collision. The second non-injury collision occurred at South Bay and Napomo. That was a solo vehicle that struck a road sign. And then the third non-injury collision was also a solo vehicle collision. That vehicle struck a tree in the vicinity of Los Osos Valley Road and Turi Road. The hit and run collision. Hit and run collision occurred at 9th Street and Santa Ynez. Now, that was a vehicle versus a motorcycle, and the gentleman driving the vehicle fled the scene, and we were able to apprehend him later. And then the DUI collision. DUI collision occurred on Los Osos Valley Road and Clark Valley Road. There were some minor injuries in that collision. So that's my report. Sorry for looking down and not looking at the camera there, but I was just making sure I had all the information. I'm certainly available for questions as well.
Any questions from the board? We appreciate your time tonight. Thank you.
I appreciate you having us each and every month. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Take care. Okay, agenda item 4D, the Utilities Department report. Anybody have questions about that written report? I guess the one thing that I noticed is that 8th Street upper well seems to have really allowed the others to back off.
Yeah, I was going to talk to that a little bit. A couple of things. I did want to point out the per capita rate for the month, too, at about 47 gallons per person per day, continue in that 40 mid 40 range is amazing. That means people actually shut their irrigation off.
Is this the winter that we can really finally say this is our baseline for indoor use? Yeah. I do believe that.
Exactly. Paying the sewer rate on this.
Exactly.
And I did want to also point out in both the production and runtimes how, you know, we've been able to rely on our Third Street and South Bay lower wells. Those wells run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they're lower production wells, but they're kind of been the workhorse through the winter, which has allowed for us to back off on some of our others. And you're absolutely right. The 8th Street upper is starting to make a difference. And we'll see more and more of that as it's in use. It's only been probably a month and a half that we've had it going. But any other question? I was going to just do a quick update on some of the projects. We did provide a notice to proceed to Hartzell Construction for the transmission main that will run from the Bay Oak site down to Napomo. They came in at about $100,000 under our engineering estimate and almost $200,000 below the next lowest bidder. So anyway, we're excited to get that project going under budget. The other thing we kicked off this week was our water resilience intertie project environment assessment. We met with the SWCA, our consultant, and things are underway on that. So I'm excited to really get that project moving forward. So if there's any questions on the utilities part, Other than that, I can move into my general managers.
And it looks like no further questions.
On the general manager report side, we've finally started our monthly meeting.
Could I back up here for a second? I'm sorry, I was trying to get to where I wanted. Uh-huh. Under the utilities manager report, it had the update about the basin repairs.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Could you give us a little more detailed update on that?
Yeah, that was part of my GM
report. Oh, if it's part of yours, but it was the last item in the utilities report.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, yeah, let me give an update on that. Of course, we started repairs back on March 6th, made great headway over the next two or three days, and then we got the March storms that seemed to come in weekly. That definitely hampered our ability to proceed. Now that the rains have stopped for hopefully a period of time, Hartzell, who is we contracted with to do those repairs, has been in the east side of the basin trying to dewater it. Those winds we had last Monday helped. The weather, even though I hate the wind, it's helping. They were hopefully going to be up there, if not today, tomorrow, to really start some serious work. And we are scheduled, and hopefully the schedule holds, to have the liner installed the week of April 17th. So that means all the other, we have to take off all the vegetation on the whole north side of the basin and prep it for that liner. So we're excited that's moving forward finally. I'll move on over. I'm excited to say we've started our monthly meetings with the County Planning Department. It had been a little bit of a break there, I think, between holidays and other things. They've been kind of shelved for a little bit. You know, and again, the top main topic is the water offset water conservation study that's been in the process for some time. They've indicated their schedule has it wrapping up by the end of June. So we'll start seeing public drafts of that shortly. That'll indicate where that's going. The other question I've been getting a lot is the impact of winter rains on our water supply. Cleith Harris has started their spring monitoring. They may have all that collected this month, so we may hear something sooner than what I indicated here to see what our water level metric looks like. Of course, you know, groundwater basins don't recover after one rainy year, so this will just be another point in that progress towards balancing our basin. Another project we're working on is the recycled facility planning grant that the BNC initiated, but we're the lead agency on. We put our RFP out a few weeks ago, and we got three proposals back. So the BNC will be working on evaluating those. When I get back from vacation, we're going to have a meeting and decide on a consultant for that. And that's the main outcome of that one is the development of the transient model, which will be an important tool for us. Been working with FEMA, had two in-person meetings. One was in the office here that went about 2.5 hours, and then about a 2.5 or 3 hour inspection up at the basin was the second one. I have to say the FEMA staff that I've been dealing with have been very, very, very helpful. But now I think we get into where they take the results of these meetings and it moves up the management chain. And so we'll see how that goes. There's still a documentation I have to continually provide, but I'm hopeful on that, but I'll keep you posted. As I alluded to, San Luis Ambulance has been underperforming somewhat, and it seems to be getting worse. I've had now two meetings with them. CAL FIRE has been very helpful in those meetings. County emergency services staff, medical services staff have been extremely helpful, but it's very disappointing on the response time or responses back to our request to improve those times. And I'll be keeping you more informed. Chief Provinson and I are going to be putting together some sort of report that'll be an actual agendized item so you can better understand what's going on. And then finally, I have to shout out a couple of our water crew that celebrated anniversaries. Clint, he was kind of the baby and still is the youngest member of our team, been with us 11 years now, so it's quite a long time. And Ramel, who's been with us for 16 years. I can't say enough about the two of them and how they contribute to our team. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Any questions from the board? Teamwork is important, and a long-term relationship allows that to happen. And I like the way you said that. It appears the study is scheduled for completion by the end of June. Very good. Okay, so we had a Chamber of Commerce report, I think, sent around. Email to us today.
And Tom Cross is their new president, and he's going to get those to us in time to be in the packet.
Okay,
and great. Tom's been very good. He actually comes to a lot of these meetings. So.
Lots of meetings. And then there's LOCAC report. If there are any questions about that, direct them at Director Gatchel.
I did have a question. The first item on there was discussions with the sheriff and CHP about continued overnight camping and palisades and abandoned vehicles. I mean, continued discussions, what's happening?
You can answer Troy better.
Discussions don't, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of community comments about continued camping on palisades, what's going to happen and enforcement of that. And then trying to get people to the proper sites. The second thing I think they were looking at is an additional site for people to go to. I think that's in southern area of the counties.
Down in South County.
So, right.
There's just a lot of community comments. And I think it's the whole thing that we talked about here, the 4-hour parking and stuff like that, but that hasn't been moved forward at all at the county. So they just have continued enforcement.
So, but the sheriffs and the CHP aren't doing any
increased enforcement. They are going as much as they're doing as much as they can within the certain regulations that they have.
Just when they happen to be here.
Yeah, it's pretty much how it's been.
I was just wondering about that because it's getting worse almost on a daily basis now.
And until there's maybe a replacement for Oklahoma, and I don't know what that time frame is, and that model certainly wasn't the answer. Some people would like a permanent campground, and that's not what it was meant for. It was a transitional, let's help with case management and all that kind of thing. So we've got to stay tuned. There's just a whole lot more, and obviously from all the discussion on Nextdoor lately, Morro Bay's got their share of problems too. I think maybe we're hearing a lot about it now because they're more traditional encampments in creeks and not this winter. And so they're not there now and they're more visible.
I did see an article that the city of SLO is trying to change their camping to enforce more. I haven't got a chance to read it yet. So we'll see what the city of SLO might do and maybe we can push some of that.
Yeah, it's an ongoing thing. We've got to stay tuned. Okay, no Parks and Rec Committee meeting. A utility advisory committee, we always follow the BMC report. And I think the big topic that I remember was the presentation from the Water Quality Control Board, regional board, about nitrates. Was that last BMC? The increased and continuing problem of nitrates in the lower aquifer at the west end of the basin. And the water board's been doing some DNA and whatever sampling that they need to do to differentiate the source. Is it the horse farms, the subdivisions up the hill, just where's that? And that testing is ongoing. But that discussion is out there. And then I see that the state board, I think, just released again the next step in the revision of the on-site waste treatment systems. And so we may be hearing more about more expensive treatment systems if you stay with those, and who knows? That's a subject that I didn't think would come back this soon. We had our usual updates, but I think that was the BMC topics.
Right, we did. I did do a glimpse at the fund 500 and 800 budgets.
Right. That's right. Always.
You're going to, the board will see that next meeting.
It's been some,
can I add something on the BMC?
That, yes.
That Chuck was elected vice president. So he,
process, I mean, you rotate, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And just a couple
everybody of takes a turn.
State and us are the two officers.
Yes, yes. BMC, there'll be more discussions about S&T and Intertie with potentially with us. That subject is out there. We'll hear more about that. There's a lot to be discussed at the BMC level. In the near future.
Kind of the other BMC was the AEM, the Aerial Electromagnetic Survey.
Right, that is going to happen.
It's the helicopter using an electromagnetic device to look at where the seawater intrusion, it actually maps the basin, but it'll help us identify areas for the seawater intrusion. That's going to happen later this spring. And that's being done by the Department of Water Resources.
Yeah, we were added, I think, to that
yes.
effort.
We were passed over the first time they went right. through, and now we've been added.
Finance Advisory Committee report.
Well, I guess with the regular agenda items, they recommended approval of the warrants and receive and file the financial reports. How much detail should I go in?
I think you should preview what we're going to be talking about soon.
Okay, so we had a presentation from Wolf Hansen. They're actually who did our refinance, but the Stephen Gortler was somebody else we looked at for doing the refinance. He had his own shop, but now he works for Wolf Hansen, so he came in. I am a little concerned with the bank runs. The way our agreement with Pacific Premier works is they are supposed to collateralize our money, probably with bonds. It could be municipals or treasuries by 110%. But because interest rates have gone, I mean, treasuries a year ago, a one-year treasury was around 1%, and now it's more like 4.6%. What happens is if you have a treasury that's yielding 1%, but you could get a new one that's yielding 5%, the value of your treasury goes down, which if they're able to hold to maturity is not a problem, because at maturity you get your money back. Where it's a problem is if there's a bank run and they're forced to sell things, you maybe don't get all your money back. What did happen with the other bank runs though is the federal government came in and guaranteed it, and they're not explicit about it, but I think that the Fed put is probably still there. But what we've been looking into is custodial accounts. Where instead of when you have money at a bank, you know, you give that money and they invest it and try to get a return. If you have money at a brokerage, it's like a custodial account, your money is your money. And they have higher limits. The limit at the bank's $250,000, which is not sufficient for us. And the rest of it would be you just see what after they liquidate the bank what your portion would be.
It would take a lot of bank accounts to insure fully everything that we had. I mean, a lot of spreading it around.
Yeah, that's a lot. Okay. Of different banks.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, we're looking into it. Wolf Hansen gave a presentation which I thought was one of the best solutions I'd seen, where they were investing in treasuries, they were laddering them, keeping it really short, like 3, 6, 9 months and a year. the yield on that was over 4%, even after fees. So I was kind of just looking at, say, if we did Pacific Premier money, it's over $200,000 of interest we'd make doing it that way. Another choice I called up LAIF. LAIF interest rates tend to lag, which when rates are going down is good because their rates are higher, but now rates are going up. So they're a little behind, but I think they're approaching 3%. But the LAIF funds is like 15% of the general funds. I mean, I think state of California is now the fourth largest economy in the world. Last I heard, we overtook Germany. So that's like a different kind of safety, but it's also an option. I talked to Optum Investment Partners, and it sounded like they were recommending a similar plan to Wolf Hansen, but they're willing to give us a kind of a cash flow analysis, which sounded like that would be good. But it's the same. They do like a custodial account. You pay a fee. You know, when interest rates were below 1%, it didn't make sense to pay any fees. But if you can get 4%, you know, we net back so much more money. It does make sense. You know, a year from now, maybe that would change. Like, you have to see what interest rates do. And the other is we're trying to connect with Mechanics Bank, but because I think they have an arm that they can buy treasuries for us as well. So we're looking at, I think the Wolf Hansen option was a solid option, but I don't mind seeing what other people have to offer, but I would like to, I'd feel more comfortable if we had like our money was in our own account.
Yes, it's a work in progress, but Chris and I are putting in quite a bit of time right now to look at it.
It makes sense with the change in interest rates that the banking situation scenarios obviously have changed quite a bit. No, I promise I won't start a run on any banks that we're associated with. If everyone else step up, make that promise, maybe we won't see that. That's an interesting situation. Almost a self-fulfilling prophecy up there. Cause your own problems and then get bailed out. I'm still a little annoyed.
And I apologize for not being able to make the meeting. Something just came up at the last minute, so I apologize.
Oh,
thank you, Chris. That was my question for the night. So you're already
off. Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh,
cash accounts, bank safety.
Yeah, like, think mm-hmm. about our money. Mm-hmm. Like, my money at the bank, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But the CSC money, it woke me up at night. I will not lie.
Well, don't lose too much sleep, but thank you for being concerned. We've got one person losing enough sleep in the last couple months. Okay, no ESAC meeting report about. We covered basin management issues. Director's announcements of district and community interest and reports on attendance at public meetings and so forth. Do we have anything in that regard? Okay, response to previously asked questions.
We have done. No questions to respond to.
Public comment for items on the administrative and committee reports in the consent agenda. Before we do that, any... I don't want to pull anything from that lengthy consent agenda. Yeah, I like that.
Probably the shortest one we've had.
Yes. No resolutions of any kind.
Yeah, you don't have to sign anything tonight.
Okay. I was practicing. So we'll go to public comment for items on the administrative and committee reports and the consent.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There's no public comment online.
Okay, none in the boardroom, no pulled items. Future agenda items, anyone have anything?
We need to approve that.
Oh, that would help.
I would like to make a motion.
Glad you're back, Marshall.
That's my job to do this one thing, you know. I'd like to make a motion to receive and file the administrative committee reports and approve the consent agenda.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion second. No reasons for a individual vote. So all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that carries. And now we'll go to future agenda items. Agenda seems pretty full these days. You've got a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
balls in the air.
You'll have the preliminary budget and quite a few other things in May. It'll be a little more busy, I believe.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good that you have a nice quiet meeting right before you head out on vacation. And enjoy it. Closing board comments. Anyone have anything to bring out to the community's attention? I guess one thing I would say, I know there's been some questioning about the Digging Deep concert and the proceeds and when does that disbursement begin. And so I'll give an update tomorrow. I believe the forms, we had a form similar to the GoFundMe effort that we distributed throughout the neighborhoods that asked people about just their situation. And we need to give the money where it's needed the most. And we just had to gather some information. So those forms are due back tomorrow. We're gonna meet on the 21st after a couple of our committee members are on back from vacation. And that's probably the day we'll be making that decision on the 21st. So people that had questions, the Kiwanis money and the Digging Deep money, it's about $53,000, I believe. And we'll be making that decision about the 21st. Thank you for your patience. We're still getting forms in from people that were on Pine and Ash and others that kind of slipped by the wayside. And I kind of think we, the county, whoever, dodged some real bullets on Pine Street for the number of sandbags that are out there. The number of homes that were really affected badly were minimal. Some creative sandbagging out there.
People. Yeah, I drove up there today and the number of sandbags on Pine is just unbelievable.
That's no way to live. That is just no way to live. I'm sandbagging your front door, your driveway all winter. So
I have one thing. And I should have written it down, but I think Carol Hall is retiring. She's she helped start Los Osos Cares. Mm-hmm. I think she was
Minister,
like, Woman of the Year. Mm-hmm. They're having a party for her at St. Ben's. I think all are invited. I want to say it's the 25th, but I don't know for sure. So
I forget the date. So
yeah, I bet you could check their website and it would be on there.
Enjoy your vacation and congratulations on a whole story in the Estero Bay News about the Broderson valves and the monitoring and everything, the county recycled water valves that are going to be up there. The county handled it all. They didn't even have to talk to Mr. Munns to find out what was really going on. That was good to see. And with that, we will adjourn.